Going to bring in now somebody who has a little bit of knowledge along the way about college basketball and a wide variety of everything else in life, Dick Girardi. I know that we don't like each other. We rarely talk except when we're forced to on the air, but it's still nice that you conceded some time to me today.
Well, probably a mistake, but I'll do my best.
You said that 9 years ago.
How are you?
Doing well. How are you? First of all, I have to make sure you are not being passed as you drive, correct?
No, I'm actually cruising in the slow lane today. So I decided not to rush up there. I'm just taking my time. But you know, to hang with you, pal, it's always good.
There we go.
Congratulations on your new show, Bob.
Yeah, appreciate that. We're having a great time here. I'll say this, though. I look around the station, and they're not, but I am. All right. let's get to college basketball. I want to start with a team that would be under almost everybody's radar unless they really follow college basketball. They won again. They were behind by 9 to Southeast Missouri at home, won. Murray State's the only undefeated team in college basketball at 22-0. Watched them. I was impressed by their speed, quickness, and how they play the modern game.
Yeah, they're fun. They play small for obvious reasons because they're a school that's not going to get a lot of big players. They do have one kid with a old ABA-style afro. It's great to see him out there. He looked like he belonged in the fish. His name is Pittsburgh. It was classic, but the kid Isaiah Cannon, their guard, their star player, he could play anywhere, Steve. I mean, he's really good. I watched the game last night, too, and they went from, I don't know, 9, 10, 11 down to 11 up in, like, what, 5 minutes? That's a sign of a good team. And, look, I don't care who you are. If you're 22-0, you're good. They're legit. Now, how will they do in the NCAA? Obviously, it will to be determined with their seed, who are they playing against, what are the matchups, those kind of things. But, no, they're very good.
Yeah, and that's a team that, for example, people would not give a long look at, say, oh, Murray State. They made a little bit of a mark last year, but there is a team that I look at and say, you know what? Again, I'm with you. It depends on the seed, depends on the matchup, but they bear watching.
Yeah, they do. It's interesting because 2 years ago, they actually beat Vanderbilt in round one and lost to Butler at the wire in the next game. And we know where Butler finished. They finished a missed three-pointer away from winning the national championship. So that tells you that they were already heading in the right direction, and that just do you win the close games or not often depends on how far you go. But now they're fun to watch, too, because they do, as you said, they play the modern game, and they play it really well, coached. Steve Brown, their longtime assistant, became the head coach when Billy Kennedy got the Texas A&M job. And got to like a coach that's never lost a game as a head coach. That is true of Steve at the moment.
Yeah, exactly right. It's true for them at the moment. Not only that, you know, I think any team that does what they are doing is dangerous because they know how to win, and that's an important part in all this. There are going to be a lot of teams that go into the NCAA tournament. Now, they may falter in the Ohio Valley tournament. You don't know. Things are crazy at that time. But many teams go into the NCAAs off a loss, and they have to rebuild some momentum. They may not have to. They may have it cruising into the thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting as they get further along because, Steve, as you know, I covered that St. Joe's team that was 27-0. And as it got toward the end, actually their second-to-last game was at Rhode Island, a team they were probably 20 points better than. But you could feel the heat on them that day. Even Delonte West said it after the game. It's the first time he actually felt the pressure of being unbeaten. And they still have some road games in their league, including that team they played last night, Southeast Missouri. So it won't be easy. And they have a home, really good home bracket buster game with St. Mary's in a couple of weeks. That should be very interesting. Because the last I looked at them, they're 18 or 19-2. So that's a test. But yeah, no, right? If they get into the thing, if they come down to the last 5 minutes, they won all these games, they're not going to be confused about the situation.
Right. In fact, I saw St. Mary's play the other night. The Gales, once again, very good. And they play well in a team concept at both ends of the floor.
Yeah, that will be, I think that's the 6 o'clock bracket buster game on a Saturday. And that will absolutely be a joy to watch because you're talking about Randy Bennett's really one of the guys nobody talks about, but his team really plays well together. As you said, obviously, we've watched Murray State. That'll be a basketball connoisseur's delight to see those stuff.
Once you and I get through Michigan State, we will at least together have seen in person Kentucky, Ohio State, Indiana, Michigan State, in person seeing some of the better teams. Kentucky's the best one I've seen so far, although I saw somebody on ESPN.com write a story they think Ohio State's better. After seeing them both in person, they may be a little different in style, but Kentucky's the team, I think. I look at them. Those are thoroughbreds.
Yeah, I would, Steve, I'd give a slight edge to Kentucky on that. I thought Ohio State's team last year was better than this year's team, and that's not to slight this year's team, but they just had better offense last year. They had more diversified offense with the John Diebler out there. They don't have that player this year. But, boy, man, they are more athletic this year, Ohio State, and deeper than they were last year. They only went about six deep last year. So they certainly have a chance to win it all. And Kentucky's just – they are the most talented team. Anthony Davis is starting to score now. He's the nation's leading shot blocker, probably the number one pick in the NBA draft. Kid Gilchrist, I mean, they're loaded. So, yeah, it's really close to me. And we saw Kentucky early. But I would probably be with you and give the split edge to Kentucky.
And what gets me about both teams, Ohio State and Kentucky, both of them play great defense.
Yeah, Ohio State, by the numbers, we talked about the night we were in Columbus, are by far the best defense in the country. It's unreal. They don't make mistakes. They don't foul, so you never get to shoot free throws. They're great on per possession. And Kentucky's one of those teams that you feel like they could throw a shutout at somebody any, like, eight-minute stretch. And if you can do that, that's the same as going on a run, because assuming you're going to score 10, 12, 14 points, you just put the distance between you and the other team. They really guard you, which means there's zero chance they're going to be out of any game they play in the tournament.
In fact, Kentucky has gone through a stretch of games where we're allowing, I think, 44 points a game over the last 2 weeks, which is incredible. And Ohio State, I made the analogy that night at Ohio State, that it's like driving on the interstate at midnight, and every single median strip and every single exit and every single entrance has a state trooper. You can't get going.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be true of just about anybody they play. And it's interesting, especially in the Big Ten, because, Steve, as you know better than anybody, that as we get into February and the scores start to come down, the possessions start to come down, the coaches get tighter, the players get tighter, well, that just plays into the hands of a team that plays great defense. I know Ohio State's up at Wisconsin tomorrow, or is it tomorrow or Sunday? I'm losing track of days, but whenever, I guess this weekend, I don't see a big number being put up by the winner of that game.
No, how could you possibly, after watching the two teams play and the way they play defense?
Wisconsin doesn't even matter if they don't play any defense. There just aren't enough possessions to score.
Right, they're taking every possession, every shot clock down inside of 10 virtually every time. If they take a quick shot, Bo calls timeout.
Yeah, we had 53 the other night. It would have been under 50 without the fouling in the last, like, 2 minutes.
Well, and you and I had gone into that game and had said, you know, you asked me what I thought the number of possessions would be. I said under 65. You picked 62. Without the fouling, it's under 50. It's even more ridiculous than that.
It was way slower than even we thought, because – Wisconsin was at 59. I think Penn State was at 62. And I'm thinking, all right, well, maybe it's a home game for Penn State. Maybe go slightly faster. It didn't happen. It would have been under 50 possessions, which you see not very often during the season in any college game.
I mean, I'm not going to get into what other people do, but you and I talk a lot about possessions. And because this is something I don't understand on the national scene when I watch a game. Possessions are the opportunities in a game. If the game is wearing down, the number of possessions at the end take away the number of opportunities to win the game. I've never understood why you and I are virtually the only ones that talk about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because people will talk about how many points a team scores or how many they give up. They're relevant to a point, but they're relevant to how many possessions there are in the game. And it's all about points per possessions scored or stopped. And it's nice that all those stats are now out there. And I actually was doing it by hand the other night, so we'd have them. And again, that slow pace, that might not be so easy tomorrow in Iowa, because we're going to go a lot faster tomorrow. But in that game, you can do it. And that's it. That's the whole game. How are you doing under possession? And when you get down to those last 4 or 5 minutes, it becomes magnified. And that's where a kid like Jordan Taylor is so good, as you pointed out on the broadcast. I mean, he might just be sleepwalking for 36 minutes, but in the last 4 minutes, he's the best player on the floor.
That's a case where if they hand you a stat sheet, and you look at the stat sheet and you say Jordan Taylor's hitting 39% of his shots. You know, if you really understand how to use stats, you don't use that stat. I mean, that's one thing. You and I think in the last 5 or 6 years, you and I have used fewer stats than ever because we've tried to pick out the most relevant ones that would tell you about the tone of the game. I felt that was a relevant one because he's 57% in the final 5 minutes of a game from the field.
Yeah.
To me, that's the relevant stat.
Yeah. He brought it up before the game, and it played out exactly that way. I mean, he's got a little Taylor battle in him that way. Taylor could have those nights where he'd be 2 for 13, but I don't know if Brian Seacrest ever put together his entire last 4 minutes of his close games in his career, but it seemed to me he had to be shooting 65% or 70%. He didn't miss much.
Yeah, I mean, rarely. I mean, it just seemed that when you needed the big shot, that's why what made his junior year a little bit of a mystery, because he had some of those opportunities and could not get them, but in his freshman, sophomore, and his senior seasons, it seemed like he was the man at the moment and took care of business.
Yeah, Steve, I would say the difference was in his junior year, he just didn't have any help.
Right.
Jeff Brooks hadn't really blossomed at that point. Jamel Farley was out of there. There were other people that could score, but his junior year was all on him. And so that was part of it. But, yeah, that was the one aberration in his career, because obviously the rest of it, I mean, you've been doing this a long time. I've been doing it a long time. I've never seen a player any better in the last 4 minutes of the game at the college level than he was.
Right. And, you know, some players may be like that for a month or for a couple of weeks, but over 4 years, the consistency of it was amazing.
That was amazing.
Also, Duke played Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech started the game with 16 fouls. Just kidding.
Duke was in the 1-1 on the jump ball.
On the jump.
Even though it was in Blacksburg.
Yeah, it was in Blacksburg. Foul was called. They shot 1+1, took a 2-0 lead. Nah.
Yeah, it's interesting how that happens. I've seen Duke a number of times this year. They're fun to watch, like they always are. But as I look at them, they're just not going to be good enough defensively to make a huge run in the tournament. They're too easy to drive by, too easy to score on near the basket. They don't have the kind of players they had on the team 2 years ago that could really get stopped. So I could see them depending on matchups again, I could see them not lasting all that long in the tournament this year.
Right, and again, it all comes down to matchups. They may end up here and there with a half-court team. They're in great shape, but if they get a team that is athletic, wants to defend you, and then at the other end can set you up for a blow-by, they're in trouble.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And it was interesting, 2 years ago when they won the title, they didn't get any of those teams. The closest they had was Baylor in the regional final. They just never got it. Those teams all got eliminated, and that's part of the fun of the tournament. You can just get a break, or you can get unlucky and get the wrong matchup. That'll be like last year. They got knocked out by Arizona in the Sweet 16 because they had precisely those kinds of players you described, Steve, and they couldn't keep in front of them.
The city is an interesting one this year, and you've covered a lot of city ball so far this season. And it may not be the most talented, but it seems, Dick, on the surface, it's the most competitive. I want to talk about a kid that nobody nationally is talking about, and that's Rosen of Penn.
Yeah, and they should be. I mean, I think he was on the final 20 of the Bob Cousy Award. I think he got eliminated at the last go-round. And I saw some of the players on the final list, and I'm not going to knock anybody, but he's having a better season than they are. Some of those people are reputation guys or just have to be at bigger schools. Yeah, Zach Rosen at Penn has played point guard as well as anybody in the country, and I've seen him probably 7 times live. And you just sort of have to be there to appreciate it. They're not on television. Keep an eye on their games this weekend, Steve. They're at Yale tonight and at Brown tomorrow. If they win both of them, they'll be undefeated 5-0 in the Ivy League, and they'll play Harvard at the Palestra a week from tonight. And if they get to that game undefeated, all of a sudden all the heat's going to go on Harvard, which is the clear Ivy favorite, is ranked in the top 25. And that will be a fascinating game if we get both teams can get their undefeated.
Right, exactly. And he played a near perfect game the other night that you saw.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, Princeton Penn Monday night, it was funny because Penn scored in the 80s against Princeton, which hadn't happened in 40 years. And it was really because of how their point guard, Zach Rosen, just orchestrated the game if you just imagine this team, they obviously, like everybody else these days, run a lot of those high ball screens. And Preston was switching it the whole time, and Rosen would end up on a big player, maybe with 20 seconds on the shot clock. So he'd just take his time, take like 10 seconds, and just line them up. Either shoot a three over him or drive by him. And it was just like, that's how you do it. It's like a clinic. Some guys get excited and try to go too quickly. He just plays at the right pace all the time.
Well, you saw St. Joe's against Penn State early. You've seen a lot of St. Joe's during the course of the season. How good is Phil Martelli's team?
Well, it's interesting, Steve. They had an unbelievable December when they were home the whole time. And when the calendar turned to January, they have been kind of up and down. And they've especially had issues on the road. Their point guard, Carl Jones, has been in a bit of a slump. He sprained his ankle. He missed the game at Xavier. They are talented, but still really young. They only have one junior on the roster, no seniors. So I think they were always saying, look, next year is going to be the year. But they're competitive in the Atlantic Ten, which is obviously a good league. I don't think they're good enough to win it. But if everything breaks right, they certainly could make a run in the tournament. But I know all the St. Joe's fans were not happy the last couple of years when their team lost 20 each year, but that's clearly not going to happen this year. They probably are looking at the NIT at the moment, but it would have to break right for them for the NCAA. But, yeah, they are better, and it's a really good game in the city tomorrow at noon. LaSalle and St. Joe's play at the Fluster, where they always play every year, and they just split the house.
And LaSalle, to its credit, has made a really nice program comeback along the way.
The best team they've had in 20 years. They haven't, believe it or not, LaSalle, Steve, has not been in any postseason tournament in 20 years, since 1992. That was the NCAA with Randy Woods, Jack Hurt, and Brian Holland, a lot of Pennsylvania guys on that squad. And they won the old Metro Atlantic. Well, that was their last year in the Metro Atlantic. They went to a league in the Midwest, which is a disaster. They came back to the Atlantic 10 in the mid-90s, and they just haven't been able to get it done. Well, they're playing, they look a lot like Murray State. They play really small. They play four guards. They're almost impossible to keep out of the lane. They really play good defense off the ball. And they're sitting at 17 wins, and they're first by themselves at the moment in the Atlantic 10. And they were picked 13th in the league. So nobody saw this coming.
And, of course, the biggest threat to LaSalle in terms of keeping that lead is?
Temple.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're the team to beat. They're a half game behind LaSalle. They played one fewer game. And they actually beat LaSalle head-to-head at the Lea Forest Center a couple of weeks ago. There is a game at LaSalle in a couple of weeks where LaSalle will get their chance on their home court. Temple still has to go to St. Joe's. But the thing Temple has that the other schools don't have in the city is seniors. They got Ramon Moore, who's I'll tell you how good he is. You've seen him up close a number of times, including in Tucson last year. Mm-hmm. They got Khalif Wyatt. Michael Eric is now back. They have Juan Fernandez, who hit that shot, of course, to beat Penn State in the tournament last year. And all these guys have played in a million big games. I now think they are a serious Sweet 16 threat. They're going to be in the tournament for sure. They're already in there. They beat Duke. They have some great wins. They're a lock to be in it. I think they're really, really dangerous, Steve, now, because they have tournament experience. They broke through last year. They almost beat San Diego State, even though they were down two starters last year in the next round. So, yeah, I think Grant Dunkey's team is nobody's going to want to see them turn.
Michael Eric is a player that we did not see in Tucson last year. He was hurt, missed a chunk of time. His return, even though he's still in the comeback phase, what does that mean to the floor balance that Temple can present a team?
Yeah, their biggest issue this year has been defense. They just haven't been up to the typical Temple standards, and the reason is because they're so small. They always have LaVoy Allen back there and Michael Eric. This year, obviously, the boys playing with the Sixers are playing really well, by the way. And Michael missed 6 weeks, and he just came back. So now with him out there, their defense becomes dramatically better. And what they've done, and it's a tribute to the coach, they changed their style of play. They're playing at a much higher tempo, take advantage of what they do best, which is play offense. So now their offense is much better, and Eric's going to get their defense better. That's why I just don't think anybody's going to want to play them. They're deep. Their bench is good. They have some guys that people have never heard of that can play. You know, Fran's got a program going there. They're looking at their fifth straight NCAA, and in this day and age, that's a tough go. And I don't think it's going to be the last, even though they're going to lose Ward, Fernandez, and Eric. I think it's going to continue on. I think they're going to be one of the two or three best teams in that league for into the foreseeable future.
And then there's Drexel. I mean, Drexel is, you know, they may not be, quote, Big Five, but they certainly make a very interesting number six team in that city.
Yeah, they've won 10 in a row. They've only lost once since early December. They are playing as well as anybody in the city. Now, they only got one chance to play a city team this year, and that was at St. Joe's, and it was early. And they weren't ready yet. They played particularly well that night. I think they're going to win the CAA regular season because of the way the schedule plays out. Right now they're in a three-way tie with George Mason at VCU, and they've already beat both of them. And they don't play on the road against either one of them. So I think the schedule's going to break their way. They're at Towson tomorrow, and Towson already had their winning streak, so I don't think they're going to win again. Boozer Flintstein, Steve, unlike recent years when they were always really good defensively and they're still good defensively, they can actually score. This is also a team that I think is potentially tournament bound, even if they don't win the Colonial. And what they don't have is great non-conference wins. But, boy, if they win the Colonial regular season, given what's going on with that league, and I know you're not supposed to look at past years, but VCU in the Final Four, George Mason in the Final Four, I find it hard to imagine you could keep a team out that would win that league's regular season if they could not get an at-large bid. And they would deserve it, maybe not on the paper when you look at it, you go, all right, who did they beat, who did they play? But on the eye test, if you look at them play, you say, wow, this team is one of the 38 best teams. And to me, at the moment, they clearly are.
And that, to me, is the single biggest fault of the NCAA selection committee. I don't think they have a handle on the eye test.
Yeah, I don't either. And they go by their numbers, and I know people that say, well, that's the only fair way to do it. And I would disagree with that. I think there's some objectivity and there's some subjectivity in this. And especially if a team like Drexel, they were down Chris Fouts. Chris Fouts didn't play early. He was hurt. And he's one of their better players when they lost some games early. So you factor that into it, and you just look at him. You go, how are they playing? Who are they playing? How are they doing against these teams? And when you look at them play, are they capable of beating some of these good teams? And the answer is yes. So, to me, they're a team that, again, might not get in on the, if you just go by the figures and the RPIs of the world, but if you look at them, you say, boy, they really belong in the tournament. I think it's really close to the city who the second-best team is, and I think Temple's the best team. Right now, to me, it's about a dead heat between LaSalle and Drexel. It's really close.
Dick Girardi with us on the line. One more segment with Dick coming up in a moment. We'll be back right after this.